more. And in its bid to move unrefined bitumen from the oil sands of Alberta to the refineries of Texas, TransCanada Pipeline is finding some of its toughest opponents are not environmentalists or regulators, but the ranchers and farmers whose land the pipeline will cross. That's where the current begins today. Well, we've heard a lot of protests like that lately. Many Americans do not want TransCanada Pipelines to build its pipeline from Alberta to Texas, crossing six U.S. states to do it. But there's a difference between opposing the pipeline in principle and opposing it because it's running across your backyard. Dozens of landowners across the U.S. did not wish to sell their land to TransCanada and now face legal action. It is called eminent domain. Broadly speaking, it's a principle in U.S. law that forces landowners to sell if a project is for the public good. We've reached John Harter this morning. He is a cattle rancher who owns about 500 hectares of land in South Dakota. The proposed pipeline would cut diagonally across about 110 hectares of his land. Good morning, Mr. Harter.
Good morning.
So you're one of the landowners facing an eminent domain claim by TransCanada. Tell us how it got to that.
Well, it got to that by TransCanada's lack of negotiating in fair and good faith.
Well, what happened? When did the company first approach you?
Well, it's been about 3 years ago when they first approached us, and we found out that it was going to go across our property. And soon after that, we found out that we didn't have an option to say no to the pipeline. If it was scheduled to go across your property, it was going to go, and we were told that either you're going to accept what they offer with a small amount of negotiations, or they're going to take your land from you.
Mm. So can you tell us what they offered?
I can tell you their original offer to me was $13,300 for construction easement and permanent easement.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an idea of what you thought you deserved?
Well, in my mind, as a rancher, when we go use someone else's property, we have to pay for every day we use it. And that's the way all normal people have to do business. And these multi-billion dollar oil companies are basically raping the people that own their property and have worked for years and generations for it.
So in other words, they wanted to pay you a lump sum, and that would be it into perpetuity, and you're saying that if they're going to use the land, they have to pay you an ongoing price as well.
That's correct. They should have to pay you for every day you use your property.
Okay, and so where does this stand? This started 3 years ago. Where is it now?
It's now they have filed the eminent domain process on me, and we're in a information exchange, I guess, within the court system.
Okay, and how long will that go on, do you know?
Well, they're wanting to basically cut my throat as fast as they can so they can say that they got maybe 1% more of the people in the route of the pipeline have easements. But, you know, they claim they got 80-90% of the easements, but they don't tell you how they've threatened and coerced people and lied to people how they got the easements. The fact they got them is one thing. The fact that people didn't want to have the pipeline but really had no choice is another.
Mm. Well, tell us a little bit more about your land and what you do with that land.
Well, the land that they're crossing for me is pasture land, and the land is sub-irrigated by the Oglala Aquifer, and I've asked that my land be treated as a high-consequence area because the city of Clomb's water wells are just offset my property. They're within the same quarter that they're crossing, and TransCanada has told me that they don't have to treat my land as a high-consequence area because it was not designated as such. And I believe, number one, because of the Oglala Aquifer and number two, that we have a public water source within contamination distance of the right-of-way of the pipeline, that it is a high consequence, and TransCanada doesn't seem to care about what they're going to do or the chance of ruining the largest water aquifer in North America or within the U.S.
So the Oglala Aquifer, it provides, I've got something here that says it provides more than a quarter of the water for the U.S.'s agricultural crops.
I would, if that figure could be accurate, I know that down here they've been saying it, through Nebraska it's over 2 million people, and it covers eight states, so it's a pretty important source of water.
And what effect has all of this had on you personally then?
Well, you know, just knowing that you have worked 20 years to buy your land and just about got it paid for, and somebody can come in, a foreign for private corporation, I don't care if they're foreign or not, they shouldn't be able to come in and tell you that you have to sell your land to them. It's really quite a depressing experience to go through.
Well, John Harder, I'd like you to stay on the line as I bring someone else into this conversation. Sue Kelso is with us. She has been through an eminent domain battle with TransCanada, and she's at her family farm in Oklahoma. Hello, Sue Kelso.
Hello.
What happened in your case?
Well, what TransCanada did was they came out and surveyed. We have other pipelines across the place, and they were going parallel with one of them. And then they sent us a letter with an offer, and I think the first offer was about $1,200 to go across our land, and that included pasture damage and no trees. They were going to have to take out several trees, but they didn't offer to pay for trees. And so they sent the field representative out and met with us. Two sisters and myself met with us one time. And when she came out, well, they had figured in the pasture damage and the right-of-way plus the temporary easement for their to put the pipeline down, which covered the temporary easement was like 50 more feet, and then the pipeline easement itself was 50 feet across our land, so that was 100 foot total, plus another little temporary workspace, and then they bumped it up to $3,000, and we told them, you know, we would not take that, and, you know, talked about the trees that they were going to take out, and she told us that day that TransCanada would not pay any more than that, and that we would either have to take it or they would condemn our property and take it anyway.
Mm. So you started legal action, right? Or they did?
No, they did, because we told them that we would rather settle out of court, because a lot of my family, they could not afford, you know, to chip in for lawyers and things like that. So anyway, well, then she took it back to the negotiating table and called my sister and said they're not going to go for it, and asked what the least amount we would take, and we told them. And then after that, well, they said that TransCanada would never pay that amount of money, but they had settled with all my neighbors. And I said, when I talked to them, they told me that, well, they didn't pay the neighbors that. And I said, well, we don't negotiate for our neighbors, and they don't negotiate for us, and y'all need to sit down and negotiate with us. Well, they never would. They never negotiated. We met that one time, and then the next time we heard from them, we got a letter through the mail that if we didn't sign the contract that they sent out, we had 1 week, and if we didn't sign, then they were going to condemn our property and take it anyway.
Now, I just, in the interest of time here, Sue Kelso, they in fact now are going to build the pipeline on your neighbor's land, right? They're going to bypass you.
Right, because, see, after they surveyed to put the pipeline down in one place, then they moved it the states. We never knew when they came out and surveyed the other times, and they kept moving it over several feet, you know, until they got up to the edge of our property so that they could get around most of the timber.
Well, can I ask you and John, a lot of people might want to get some extra money for a pipeline across their land. Why are you so opposed to it? Is it that it's not enough money, or is it the principle of the pipeline?
Well, we have other pipelines, that natural gas pipelines that run across the place, and we knew that they were going to put in this. Supposedly, it was a crude oil line, which was not true, and so we knew that this pipeline was going to come through, and if they had negotiated and given us a fair price, we could have settled with them.
But so it was their attitude, in other words, that bothered you so much?
Well, no negotiation, not talking to you, and then the, then they're forceful, bullying, and they're doing this before they ever had the presidential permit to put that pipeline across, and that really bothered me that they were going to put it out across our land, whether we liked it or not. And sure enough, they condemned our property.
John Harder, what about you? If you could get a better negotiation, would you go forward?
Well, that's not, the money isn't the whole thing. The safety issues of protecting our water has been my biggest concern. And I do believe that the negotiations on the money end, we have been very short-changed on this, because in South Dakota, our state law gave them the right to eminent domain basically before negotiations were ever started. And we didn't have no fair negotiations to try and get it a decent price or a fair deal from them. And but the biggest factor is safety. If I have a leak on my property and there's several quarters from north west of my place to running southeast, it's all part of the Oglala Aquifer, and it's all sub-irrigated. A lot of the land, the water sets on top of the surface of the ground a good time of the year, and once they have a spill, they cannot clean it up.
Mm.
They can make all the promises they want and all the safety factors, but when they have a spill, our land and water is done.
Well, I'm going to discuss this a little further with the next person waiting on the line who's representing more people fighting this. John Harder, Sue Kelso, thank you for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
And safety.
That is Sue Kelso. She lives on her family's farm in Oklahoma. John Harder is a cattle rancher in South Dakota. Now, the proposed Keystone Pipeline would cross six states: Oklahoma, South Dakota, Montana, Kansas, Texas. Not in that order, of course, and the home state of David Domina, Nebraska. David Domina is a lawyer who represents about 45 landowners worried they will soon be in court fighting TransCanada over their land. David Domina is in Oklahoma. Hello.
I'm in Omaha.
Omaha. I'm sorry. Oh, it says that right there, too. I just misread. Well, let's take a closer look at this notion of eminent domain under American law. Is this essentially like expropriation under Canadian law?
Somewhat. It's a constitutional idea in the Fifth Amendment in our Bill of Rights. It permits the government to acquire property from private persons when it must to build major public projects. The interstate highway system obviously couldn't have been built without it, so it's a pretty fundamental idea.
And so what? Give us an example of what you would consider a legitimate use of eminent domain.
An easy one, of course, is the interstate highway system, an airport, even the railroads, which are owned by private companies and move us closer to the TransCanada issue. They were given the power of eminent domain more than 150 years ago.
Okay. Now, TransCanada has not filed eminent domain cases in your state yet, has it? Or has it?
It has not.
And why is that?
Well, Nebraska's statutory structure does not permit the pipeline company to begin to acquire land until it has a right to build a pipeline. It has no right to build a pipeline, or this one, in the United States until it has a presidential permit to cross the border.
Okay, so every state is different then in how it goes forward with eminent domain.
That's true.
Okay. But you have clients already? They feel threatened by this process already?
Yes, and much like your previous callers, they've been the subject of pressures to grant easements without eminent domain, in effect to sell out under threat of condemnation, even before there was a right to proceed with condemnation here in Nebraska.
Okay. Now, do you think this is a legitimate use of eminent domain? We're looking at a pipeline that is supposed to feed bitumen to Texas refineries, create jobs there, create U.S. oil security, according to those who are very much in support of it.
I think it is. I think my clients all think that constructing a pipeline is a legitimate use of the power of eminent domain. In this state, TransCanada already has a pipeline that dissects Nebraska, and my folks uniformly want them to build this pipeline in the easement and right away across Nebraska they acquired without any controversy about 3 years ago.
And so the problem is what?
Location. The existing pipeline route across Nebraska would avoid the Ogallala Aquifer. It would avoid the sand hills, a fragile region of the state. It would build in a location where there was virtually no controversy from any landowner the entire width of the state when TransCanada wanted to go across with its first pipeline a few years ago.
So location is an issue. What about compensation?
Compensation is only an issue if TransCanada will not build its pipeline in the more intelligent position. Then, of course, the individual landowner has no choice but to try to maximize his recovery on his land.
I wonder if you can help me understand. We just talked to people who were offered one, you know, one. The first man was offered $13,000. The next person was offered $1,200. I've read reports that other people are offered $60,000 for easements that are roughly the same size. What comes into play there?
Three things, basically. The first is what is the character or type of land involved? Obviously, if the property dissects a higher use, higher value land, then the compensation has to be higher. Crops generally higher than pastures, building sites higher than crops, towns higher than building sites, cities probably higher than towns. That's the first thing. The second, of course, is the specific use. Is it a temporary construction easement or a permanent one? How big is it? Is the third.
Okay. And so you are waiting, I guess, to see what happens with your clients, but you're ready.
That's true.
Okay. David Domina, thank you for speaking with me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
David Domina is a lawyer. We spoke to him from Omaha, Nebraska. Now, in Canada, there is a significantly smaller geographic area affected by the proposed pipeline. And unlike in the U.S., the Keystone XL pipeline project has been approved by the government of Canada. In Alberta, many of the landowners banded together and collectively bargained for a better deal. Still, in theory, reluctant owners on this side of the border could face similar actions. Listen to this comment from John Gowdy. He's a lawyer in Alderton, Ontario.
In Canada, the equivalent of eminent domain is called expropriation, and it's something that exists basically in every part of the country and is available to both public authorities and private companies who are carrying out projects such as pipeline projects or road projects. Expropriation is a standard practice for the industry because without expropriation, they would have no option but to go around a property where they couldn't get an agreement from the landowner. You know, I hate to give any credit to the expropriation authorities in Canada, but my understanding is that the situation has been better for landowners here than in the United States, which, you know, really says something about how poor the situation has been for landowners in the United States.
That's lawyer John Gowdy in Ilderton, Ontario. The Current did invite someone from TransCanada to speak with us today. The company declined. A spokesperson said its legal counsel advised against it because eminent domain proceedings are ongoing. Stay with us. The news is next. And when we come back, the Wheat Board looks like a goner. But what about other agricultural marketing boards? We will look at the cream of the crop in our next half hour. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Satellite Radio 159.